You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Backstage with the Golden Grays. Tales from the stands to the batter's cage. The kind of stories that'll keep you engaged. Backstage with the Golden Grays.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Phillies Backstage. I'm Tom Burgoyne, joined by Director Fun of Game, Fun and Games, John Frazier. Sorry, John. It's early in the morning.
Fun of Games? All right.
It's early in the morning, and it's been a long homestand, but we're winning. It's all good. We're actually recording this, John, on September 8th. It's one day after the 42nd anniversary of the greatest September call-up in Phillies history.
And I have a feeling that that call-up is going to be our guest today.
There you go. How about that? We're very topical.
Marty Bystrom. What's up, Marty?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. Wait, I just did a Harry Callis. How did he greet you when he saw you?
Your hardness.
Your hardness.
Your hardness. Is that right? Where'd that come from?
Your hardness. Mike Kruko donned that on me in, I guess that would have been 80, maybe 82. I don't know. I can't remember if he was there in 82 or not, but Kruk gave me that nickname, Hard Marty.
Hard Marty.
Now, is that because of the way you threw? I certainly can't be your personality, right?
No, I think it had to do more with lifestyle.
some hard living. I like that.
Well, you were hanging out with Dickie Knowles back then, right?
Yeah, that's true.
That's right. I was trained by the best.
Oh, that's tremendous. And I know we just saw you a couple weeks ago. Do you love coming back, Marty, on Alumni Weekend and seeing some old friends?
Yeah, actually, Dickie and I was talking to him yesterday, and he said, "What do you think of the Alumni Weekend?" And I said, I thought it was great. I thought the Phillies did a fantastic job, over the top, laying everything out for us. And, kudos to John Middleton and everybody there for doing that. It was great seeing everybody. I mean, some of those guys I hadn't seen, we figured it out. It's been 22 years. Since a prior reunion. So, of course, everybody's aged a bit, and probably be the last time that we'll all get together again. And so it was really special.
Well, yeah, it was good to see Tim McCarver. It was good to see Warren Brewster. I mean, we had a really good crew.
And Ron Reed and Bate going honored, up on the wall. But Ron's one of those guys who doesn't always come back for Alumni Weekend. So it was great to have him and then to be honored. And I guess for you, Marty, I mean, you were, teammates, but also, were around Ron for a lot of those years.
That's right. I have a funny story that I tell everybody. And my first day when I got called up in San Francisco, we're in Candlestick Park, and as you guys know, the third base dugout then was did not have access to the clubhouse. So you had to walk across the field and through a door in right field. Well, I was always a starting pitcher in my minor league career. And so here I am, my first day in the big leagues. And I come out, I'm sitting in the dugout. And about the third inning, Dallas says, Bystrom, go down and get loose. Because Ruthen was pitching and he got in a little bit of trouble. And so I ran down to the bullpen and I said, oh, my God, I don't have my glove. I didn't bring it out. And so I ran down to the bullpen and I just grabbed the glove off the bench and got up and started throwing. And I threw about 5 minutes or so. And then they set me back down and I went to put the glove back and it was Ron Reed's glove. Hmm. And, he was the old grouchy veteran. And he says, who told you to pick up my glove? And he read me the riot act. And I ended up walking back to the dugout with my tail between my legs. Here I am, my first day. I'm trying to get along with everybody, and this happened. And he still remembers that story.
Well, plus you got a guy who's 6 foot, what is he, 6 foot?
Yeah, big
four,
dude.
4 or 5?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he was a grizzly, grunchy, grouchy veteran. So he scared the crap out of me.
Well, I, you know, Marty, we'd love to, and you know, I know you get asked about, you know, September 1980, I'm sure a lot, but yeah, John and I would love to just kind of go back and look at your career and really kind of focus on, you know, that period in your life, which you just were on top of the world. It's really fascinating, and I really, you know, exaggerating when I said, you know, I think you're the greatest call up in the history of, you know, the Phillies. And, you know, and it's often said, oh, we, you know, the Phillies wouldn't have won the World Series without Marty Beistrom or gotten there. I think, you know, there are always a couple players on a team where, you know, if you reach a championship, you can say, oh, if we didn't have Del Unser, you know, that right. year, who had such a big part of it, or a Greg Gross, or just some of the rookies that year had big years, Moreland and Lonnie Smith. But certainly your impact was major. And it is interesting. I know you were drafted in 77 and went right to Spartanburg. And I remember Spartanburg, Marty. What were your thoughts of when you started there? It was one of the oldest ballparks in the country, right?
Yeah. You know, Spartanburg, I remember a barbecue joint called The Beacon there. It wasn't much else in Spartanburg. Charlie Royals was the trainer, clubhouse manager, and bus driver. So, you know, he wore all three hats back then. You didn't have certified trainers if you had injuries and so forth. So, and I can remember, you know, every road game we would, except for going to Charleston, I think we would get on the bus in our uniforms, go play the game, and go to the concession stand, get a couple of chili dogs and a Coke, and get back on the bus and drive back in your sweaty uniforms and then shower when we got back. That's what I remember about Spartanburg.
Yeah.
Well, going back before that, Marty, though, so you, you know, you went to high school, obviously, in Miami, right? And then did you get drafted or were teams looking at you out of Miami? Because I know you eventually went to Miami-Dade Community College. So were teams looking at you out of high school?
Some were, you know, really the Phillies had a local scout down there named Catfish Smith. And he didn't think that I was ready right out of high school, and so after graduating that summer, I grew 3 inches and put on like 25 pounds, and I went to Dade South, who had was known for a great pitching coach there in the name of Charlie Green, and so I played the fall season there, and then all of a sudden the scouts were coming out of the woodwork. I threw a one hitter against the University of Miami, and the Phillies had a scout called Gus Polis, his name was, and Dallas Green had said, go down there and sign that kid. He wasn't drafted out of high school, so we can sign him as a free agent. And Gus said, you know, I'm not going to do that because I'm close with Charlie Green, and I promised him that we wouldn't do that and take him away for the season. Well, what did Dallas Green do? He fires Gus Polis.
Oh, my God.
He fired him, and he said, then he went to Hugh Alexander and said, Huey, I need you to go down here and sign this kid. You know, we can sign him as a free agent. And so Hugh came down and met with us, my parents and my coach, and signed a contract that night, and off I was to spring training in March.
At 18 years old?
Yep, 18, yep.
Wow.
Boy, that's a story, huh? And then I had no, Peninsula Pilots, Marty. And when I was doing some research, I said, I don't even remember the Phillies having a team in Peninsula. I guess it's in Virginia.
Yeah, it's Newport News.
Newport News. Okay, yeah, right down in that area. And you lit it up when you got there. You were 15-7. You had 2.83 ERA and 159 Ks. And then I guess they skipped you right over Double A. You never made the trip to Reading. You went right to Oklahoma City, huh?
That's right. Which was a little unusual back then. They did not like to rush players. It was pretty much you know, one level at a time. I had a really good year in Peninsula. As a matter of fact, Bob Walk was on that team. Ozzie Virgil, Jay Laviglio, Joe Jones, another big Phillies draft pick. But so yeah, I skipped Reading, and the following year I went right to Okie City to AAA. And you know, of course, that was a big jump back then. And but I thought I handled it pretty well, and I had a decent year there in 79.
Yeah. And was there an inkling, you know, when you, 1980, yeah, you mentioned Bob Walk, because I guess Bob Walk was on the staff at the beginning of that season. So they brought him up pretty quick as well. Were you getting an inkling a little bit as the 1980 season was going that, hey, I might get the call up? Were you talking to Bob too? Was he giving you any inside info?
Well, I think I was penciled in to make the team out of spring training, but I was injured. I had pulled a hamstring 3 days before camp started, and so I really didn't start pitching in 80 until it was like July-ish. Hmm. It's been the first half of the season was rehabbing and trying to get back, and so once I did, I reeled off like 5 or 6 wins in Okie City. Right before September, and so that's when Dallas decided to bring me up in September as an add-on roster guy, that's kind of how it all began. And then of course LC was injured, so Dallas put me in his rotation spot in New York the first game, and threw a complete game shutout, 5 hit, and stayed in the rotation.
So you're 21 years old, so you're finally legal to drink in a lot of states, right? You're 21 years old, and you're in that moment where you guys, you know, again, in a pennant race in September, and not, you know, as Tom mentioned earlier, you went 5-0, and not just 5-0, you dominated. Did you have that, you must have had obviously confidence in your stuff, you know, coming from AAA, going into a pennant race right in September. Was there any nerves, or was it basically, I got this?
Oh no, there were a lot of nerves. I pitched an inning in L.A. The ninth inning of the game, and I remember the first hitter I faced was Ron Fay, the Penguin, and I shattered his bat, and he hit a little dribbler, and then I got Garvey and I think Reggie Smith, 3-up, 3-down inning, and I said, okay, you know, this was my opportunity, and now I'm here to stay. And but I was always nervous. But, you know, what helped was having a guy like Booney behind the plate, who was a veteran catcher and a great receiver, really did a great job in knowing the hitters and how to set them up. And you know, to have Schmitty and Boa and Trio and Rose and, you know, the whole defensive cast behind you just gave you all the confidence in the world.
Yeah, and that was a veteran clubhouse. I mean, when you think of it, though, I mean, the Phillies, you know, we had gotten knocked out 3 years, you know, 76, 77, 78 in the playoffs. This was kind of being billed as the last go-round, and it was a heck of a September battling the Expos. Could you sense that there was a little bit of that, I hate to say desperation, but, hey, it's either now or never?
Yeah, absolutely. I watched those years, the 3 years prior under Danny Ozark. And I think what really helped, obviously getting Rose over there, but is Dallas. You know, Dallas ran the minor leagues and put a lot of money in developing minor league talent. And he started to infuse some of those younger guys like Keith Moreland and Ronnie Smith and Dickie Knowles and Bob Walks and Kevin Soft-Shays. And I think some of those lit a fire under some of the veterans that, you know, under the Danny Ozark reign, it was pretty much known as a country club atmosphere. And Dallas wasn't going to put up with that. He wasn't afraid to get in somebody's face, as you guys know. And he was big, he was loud and boisterous, and wasn't going to back down from anybody. And I think he lit a spark under some of the veterans and who knew that, yeah, this was their last hurrah as a team together. So this was the time to do it.
And then what was it like being a young pitcher, 21 years old, and you basically have Steve Carlton and Dick Ruthven and, you know, and some veterans out there? Did they take you under their wing?
And Tugger, too. And
Tugger,
you know,
right?
Tugger.
Any initiation for the young player? And then what was it like playing under those guys?
No initiation. You know, Tug was probably the one guy that would reach out to the rookies. But pretty much, you know, everybody else, the average age, I think, was around 30, 31 maybe. So for most of it, these guys are 8-10 years older than I am. So I didn't say a lot. I mean, rookies were supposed to be quiet and not seen and not heard is the term. I just pretty much stayed to that and hung out with the guys that I knew and came up with. But Tug was one guy that would reach out to the rookies, and man, I really missed him. I think if you ask me, who did you miss the most at the reunion, it was Tug.
Yeah. And I asked this to LC, we had him on not too long ago, and he got into the Gus Heffling rice, you know, the trash can filled with rice when you reach your arm down there to build your arm strength. Did,
yep.
did you do any of the, any of Lefty's unique fitness habits or fitness training?
I did. I worked out with Gus pretty much every day. And I lived up there in the off season. So I would come in and Gus would come in and, you know, as a young player, you look at the cast around you and of course, Steve Carlton, you know, Cy Young awards and a dominant pitcher. Okay. If this is what he's doing, then it must be something good. So, you know, I gravitated towards that. Certainly didn't have the career that he did, but it did help me as far as the strength and flexibility aspect.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. You guys know I'm always up for a good MVP story, and one of the best stories is Wasabi Technology. Wasabi is the world's hottest cloud storage company, and it's become the go-to provider for professional and collegiate sports teams, including 20 Major League Baseball teams like the Red Sox, and NHL teams like the Bruins and Vancouver Canucks. Even the Liverpool Football Club is getting in on the Wasabi action. So, why is Wasabi the MVP? Well, Wasabi was purpose-built to free businesses from skyrocketing storage costs and unpredictable transaction fees that the Amazon of the world are charging. In fact, Wasabi is up to 80% less than those hyperscalers and doesn't charge a cent for businesses to access their data. From Wasabi's AI-enabled intelligent media storage, Wasabi Air, to the industry's only cloud storage service with triple protection against cyber criminals, data deletion, and ransomware, Wasabi's taking the lead in driving innovation in data storage and helping sports teams to unleash the power of their data. Wasabi, another Boston-based championship team.
You know, you had a couple, you know, obviously huge wins down the stretch. Your last game, September 30th, you beat the Cubs at home. The Phillies needed to win that series. They swept the Cubs after having struggling with Montreal, I guess, the series before that. So it set you up for going to Montreal, needing to win 2-3 to win the East. What do you remember that clinching game?
You know, it's fuzzy, but you know, never forget the Mike Schmidt home run. I think it was off of Stan Bonson.
Yep, Bonson. Yep.
I can't even remember. I don't even know who started for us that day. A lot of that's a blur, that series, because it seemed like it just happened so fast. I mean, here I am, what, 30 days in the big leagues, and we win a pennant, which was crazy. So a lot of that was a blur. But I do remember the Schmidt home run, and I think once that happened, it just I think everybody knew that we were going to be champions.
Yeah, and you know what was cool about that too? I mean, that was you know, also for a pennant race. And now in baseball, we have so many wild cards. Do you have any opinion on, you know, the wild card system? And do you kind of look back at those days like, wow, that's when, you know, you either won the division or, you know, you weren't making it?
Yeah, for sure. It was a lot harder. I think everybody likes the one-game playoff, which makes it really exciting. But then, you know, when you think about it, 162 game season, and to have it come down to one game when maybe your best pitcher isn't available, and the travel logistically, really doesn't make a lot of sense. So I think I like the new change, where you've got three wild cards going in now. And shorter series, right? A 3 out of 5 versus a 4 out of 7.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. Because in any division, you could have a better record than somebody that, and you don't win the division yet. you've got a better record than somebody that wins another division. So you should get an opportunity to go to postseason.
Yeah. Actually, I think the wild card is just three games and all on the road.
Correct. That's three games all on the road. Rule change this year. Yep.
Well, Marty, and you know, the one game obviously that was, you know, talk about nerves, game five of arguably the best, NLCS, actually, and one of the best playoff series ever, where four of the five games go to extra innings. But game five, game you need to win at the Astrodome, and you got Nolan Ryan pitching, and you're on the mound again as a 21-year-old kid. Talk us through that moment at that point when you knew you were facing a team with Nolan Ryan on the mound.
Well, I hadn't pitched. I think I hadn't pitched in 9 or 10 days prior to that. And so I was surprised that after game four, we were all up in the clubhouse and Dallas came over to me and handed me a ball. And he said, you got the ball tomorrow, kid.
Nice.
And
no pressure.
And, yeah. I said, well, I've been waiting for it. And
nice.
So then, you know, to think about that, Nolan Ryan, I think Joe Morgan had made a comment to the media that there's no way a rookie can beat us. And we got Nolan on the mound tomorrow. And so, yeah, it was definitely pressure packed. The Astrodome was so loud. And, you know, I gave up a lot of hits that day, but really, was fortunate. I think Manny threw a couple guys out at the plate and bang, bang plays. Then, you know, to come back in the eighth inning down three runs and score five off of Nolan Ryan, which I don't think anybody had ever done. I don't even know what the statistics are on
and
that.
And it happened quick too, right? It was like a lot of first pitch hits.
Yeah. And, Booney that let off with a hit?
No, Bo a single, Boone single, and then the gross bunt, which loaded the bases.
GG lays down the bunt, then a walk or something like that. But anyway, to score five runs at that point, and then they come back and tie it, you know.
I know.
It was just unbelievable. And to experience that at that age, and, you know, I can remember going up to the plate, my first at bat, and I'm saying, okay, well, I know he's going to be trying to throw it right down the middle. So I'm going to swing. And the first pitch he threw me was high, and I took it. And I stepped back, and I said, wow, I've never seen anything that fast in my life. And so I make contact on the next pitch. I hit a ground ball to short. And I come back to the dugout, and Pete says, you know, I'm all excited. I pulled him. And he says, hey, settle down. He says, he's only throwing 90 to you and 100 to everybody else. Thanks, Pete.
Hey, well, yeah. Since we're on the topic, I mean, do you agree with the designated hitter or not, Marty?
I don't like it. I guess I'm old school. I don't like it. I think it takes away, you know, is it going to speed up the game? Yeah, but it takes away a lot of strategy. You know, when you got a starting pitcher out there, especially in the postseason, and you're going into that sixth inning, the seventh inning, you know, and he's due up to bat, what do you do?
Yeah.
The double switch, it just adds more strategy to it. So I'm not a big fan of it. And then, of course, as a pitcher, I'd rather face a pitcher than a designated hitter. And I'd rather go up the bat. And you know, the small ball game is gone. So the bunting aspect, bunt a runner up and then get them over and get them in. Those days of playing for the one run, two runs seem to be bygone nowadays.
All right, so let's move past the Houston series. So now we get to the World Series. Again, you're 21 years old, and you started game five, correct?
The pivotal game, another pivotal game.
Yes.
So walk us through that. What was your, how did you prepare? What did you do that day when you're trying to get ready mentally and physically for that game five match?
That was crazy too, because I'd flown my parents in, my college coach, my high school coach for the game. So I was trying to go out and talk to them, and here I am, I'm starting the game and I got all these distractions going on. But, you know, when it comes down to it, you got to focus. And I had a lot of confidence going into that game, obviously, with the September I had and you know, game five in Houston. And the only guy I was really worried about was George Brett. And the game plan was just, you know, try to keep it in the ballpark because, you know, he's going to make contact. He's not a strikeout guy. And you just hope he hits it on the ground somewhere and doesn't really hurt you big time. So, and I had good stuff that day. Started out the first inning. I had two strikeouts in the first inning. So that gave me even more confidence. And again, with the defensive cast that we had behind us, the confidence was blooming.
Yeah, and, you know, people do talk about that Houston-Phillies series being, you know, so suspenseful. That World Series was, too. And one of the reasons was, it's like every time you looked up, Tug had the bases loaded before getting out of his own jam. Right. And I have a great picture, Marty. It's a black and white post. It's kind of a poster. It's a little smaller than a full-size poster. But it's of Tug. I think Doug Harvey's in the background. And it's it was definitely, I think it was game five. I think it was after this game where he saved it. He had the bases loaded. And he's jumping up in the air. And, you know, it was such a big game. But you know, I asked you about Tug earlier, but I mean, down the stretch, I mean, he was just great in that. I think since July, he had only given up a handful of earned runs. But then that postseason, could you see that he didn't have much left in the tank? I know he used to talk about that a lot.
Yeah. You know, but his location was everything for Tug. Not really a guy that was going to overpower you. And, you know, he would get guys looking for the screwball away and throw that fastball, which is the pitch he threw to close out the series against Willie Wilson. He'd throw that fastball in the inside corner. And, you know, at that point, it would look like it was a 9,500-mile-an-hour pitch, and it would freeze a lot of guys because they're out looking for something soft out over the plate. But, you know, his location was so good because his mechanics were flawless. He repeated his delivery over and over. And, you know, you can relate that to, I'll give you a guy like Cliff Lee. Cliff Lee's mechanics I thought were spot on, and that's why he was always around the plate. But Tug was great. Yeah, he'd always flap his heart because he was giving everybody a heart attack when he'd load the bases, but he always found a way to get out of it. And of course, you know, game six, when the pop-up, the Booney and the Rose by the dugout in the last inning, that was just incredible.
Yeah, and going back earlier in that series, you know, we interviewed Dickie Knowles, and obviously we work with Dickie, and we see Dickie all the time. And, you know, obviously the big pitch that he had against George Brett, before that, I guess was it Willie Mays Aiken that was hit the home run and was kind of standing a little too long, admiring his home run. I think it was right. And I guess you guys got in his face saying, you know, Hey, Dickie, you know, this guy's got to, you got to hit somebody, right? I think there's a bunch of guys that were basically in Dickie's face, including a 21-year-old Marty Bystrom that was telling him, you know, Hey, Dickie, you got to do something.
I wouldn't want George Brett to find that out. But you know, that's kind of the way we were taught coming up through the minor league system. You know, Dickie and Sauce and Bob Walk and myself and these guys, you know, we were taught that, hey, these guys are trying to hit the ball back up the middle and they're taking Brett off of your plate. So you know, you give up a home run and you got to let them know who's in charge and out here. And so we were kind of taught that way, that if we gave up home runs, you know, we might put one in somebody's ribs, the next at bat and so forth. So LC started that game and, I don't know what the score was. I don't remember, but they knocked him out in the first inning. So Dickie ends up coming in and they were beating up on us pretty good that day. So I was needling Dickie in the dugout. And hey, Dickie, you got to get somebody. And other guys were too. That just happened to be the right opportunity. What a classic knockdown pitch. You can't get any closer without hitting somebody, I don't think. It totally flipped him. And then, of course, Fry comes running out of the dugout, and it was I think that pitch really turned the World Series around. I think Brett went 1-for-10 after that, something like that.
Yeah.
So it was a pivotal pitch and turned the momentum back in our favor, for sure.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I think every time John and I have somebody from either the 1980 team or the 2008 team, we always ask the same question, right, John? And that is the parade. Do you have any it was from a kid and grew up in Florida. I mean, it was probably the most people you've ever seen in one place at a given time. But what are your remembrances?
And Marty, the best friend of the Fanatic and the director of Fun and Games, were at that parade.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, of course.
Yeah, we were there.
I was on top of a statue at City Hall, so I saw you go by.
Right.
I waved to you, Marty. Marty, I waved to you.
Yeah.
Did you see me?
I wasn't even going to go. Because we were out all night, and but it was the right decision that in the end to show up, and it was just I've never seen so many people anywhere, and all the way down Broad Street. You know, now they got floats with restrooms on them. We didn't have any of that, so people were throwing beers up on the float, and to end up at JFK Stadium with 100,000 people there. And Tug holding up the paper, "We win." It was magical for sure. And after that, Bob Walk was living in South Philly, and so we got off. It was Bob Walk, Dickie, and I, and we walked through the park there back towards his place. And it's something I'll never forget. I mean, the people in that city were so thankful. 98 years that had never been done, and you know, that says a lot about that city. And you know, as not to change the subject, but I was glad to see, you know, when the Eagles finally came through and won that Super Bowl, that city really needed it. Yeah. Needed that at that time.
For sure. I have to ask you, Marty. So the JFK part of it ends, and then you guys just walk, walk to Bob Walk's place in South Philly. I mean, there are millions of fans all around. Did you get mobbed?
We really didn't. I don't think. Huh. I mean, some people will recognize us, but they probably thought that we were the last people they would expect to be seen through.
Yeah, that's funny.
Down the street. We were looking for a restroom. Right. And once we finally got there, it was so bad. We said, you know what? Let's go into the stands over here. We jumped off the float, and then we said, we'll just walk back. So that's kind of how that happened.
John and I definitely appreciated having the porta potties on the floats, right, John?
Oh yeah, Dave Montgomery, one of his greatest ideas.
That was a great idea,
Marty. Do you get? I mean, when you come back to Philadelphia, you're living in Florida now. Do you get recognized in the streets if you go down to Rittenhouse Square or you're walking around South Street? Does people say, "Hey, it's Marty Bystrom"?
Occasionally, most people say, "What happened to all your hair?" But occasionally that happens, but not all that often anymore. You know, I don't live up there, so I'm not around it that much. And like I said earlier, I mean, it was great to be back. It's great to see everybody, and again, I thought the Phillies did a stellar job in hosting everybody, and it was just a great, great time.
And Marty, I bet you Tom doesn't even know this, that you gave Fernando Valenzuela his first loss.
Is that right?
That's a great 1981, stat. He gave Fernando Valenzuela his first loss.
Wait, was that in L.A. or here, Marty?
That was in L.A.
Ah, what do you remember from that? I love Fernando.
It was sold out crowd at Dodger Stadium. 55, 56,000. And I remember going out for batting practice because, you know, the day you pitch, you get to hit with the regulars. And I put about five into the bleachers in left field. So I was all pumped up. I said, you know, Fernando, he doesn't throw that hard. I'm going to go deep tonight. And so the first is, I think Schmitty hit a three-run homer in the first inning, something like that. And I come up to my first at bat. And his first pitch he throws me is a curveball, strike one. Then he throws a screwball, strike two. And so now I'm looking for the screwball, and he throws a fastball in the inside corner, strike three. Strikes down in three pitches. I struck out three times that night on nine pitches, I think, or 10 pitches. We ended up getting the W. And yeah, that was his first major league loss. And wow, what a night that was.
Yeah,
that
and we had Fernando. Yeah. People forget this, but we had Fernando in 1994. Yeah. And that was my first year. And Marty, Tom Burgoyne right here used to do the music at the ballpark. So he would do all the sound effects and psych music and all that. And then when I started here with the Phillies in 1994, I took over the music. And this is before walk-up songs. There's no, the players didn't have walk-up songs. And I remember when we got Fernando,
right.
I had something with Dan Baker where he would say, "And pitching for the Phillies," and he'd pause. And then I would play. I'd have a cart back then. Now it's all computerized, digitalized. I had a cart that would say, it would be ABBA singing Fernando, and then he'd say Valenzuela.
Nice.
Yeah,
he was a. I ran into him in the mid '90s. I was joining my friend the Fanatic. We were down there in the Mexican Winter League, and you know, those ballparks are just, you know, they're really in terrible shape. The dugouts, you know, you're playing on like dirt fields, and I'm sitting in the dugout waiting for the game, and in walks Fernando. He was pitching that night, and by this time, yeah, he had.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really cool, and you know, he recognized me, and he couldn't have been nicer. And I said, "I'm like, well, I didn't know you did this." He's like, "Yeah, he likes, you know, going back to, you know, Mexico, and you know, it's really for the fans. You know, they love seeing, you know, Fernando pitch." So, he was really one of my favorites.
Oh yeah, and you know, guys like that, I really love watching pitch because they're pitching. They're not throwing. They're not trying to throw as hard as they can and strike everybody out. They're masters of locating and getting ground balls, and it's just fun to watch.
Well, Marty, you were that type of pitcher too, right? I mean, you had four pitches, right? You were a guy who's all about control, but you also had obviously some power on your fastball.
Yeah, you did your homework, didn't you? yeah, I have four pitches. You know, if you had to go back, I when you watch today, I would throw my changeup more back then than I did, but I had good control, good mechanics, but I also had decent fastballs in the low 90s to mid 90s, and the slider was my out pitch. But I was confident I could throw any pitch for a strike at any time in the count, which is something that you have to do when you're 2-0, 3-1 is. You know, throw something off speed, slider, change up in those counts to be successful at that level.
Yeah. Well, you did it well, Marty. All right. Well, listen, yeah, we warned you.
I appreciate it.
We warned you. You know, we're getting ready for, wait for it. We got to get let me cue up our theme music here. All right. We're ready for the John Brazier quiz.
Thanks for the visit. Let's get down to business. Now here's your chance to show how much you really know. He might get grumpy if he can't stump you with Brazier's Quiz.
All right, Marty, you ready? We have eight questions, and you have to get six out of eight.
Six
we always
out of
say
eight.
It's multiple choice. It's about your life, so you have you have some inside information, obviously inside track to do well. And Tom, Marty, we're going to send you something from our office.
Well, we just gave out that replica 1980 ring, but you've already got one of those. So,
well, give him a backup in case he leaves it in the bathroom.
Exactly, right. You may need a backup just in case you lose it.
All right, you ready? First question.
I'm ready.
You went to Miami Killian Senior High School, correct, in Miami, Florida. A lot of celebrities there, Tom. Which celebrity did not go to your high school? So three of these guys went to your high school, one did not. Three of these people did not go, or three went, one did not. All right, who did not? So you have A, former Major League Baseball player Alex Gonzalez. B, Robert Hedges, who played Juan Epstein from Welcome Back, Carter. You had
Cotter.
Former... What's that?
What
did I say?
Cotter.
Did I say Carter?
You said Carter.
Cotter. You know what? I did. I wrote Carter. Cotter. Well, of course it's Welcome Back, Cotter. Mr. Cotter.
Mr. Cotter.
That's what I was probably saying. Mr. Cotter.
Whatever. Right? You messed up.
All right.
But go ahead.
Former NFL running back Lamar Miller and Chuck Todd, who's moderator of Meet the Press on NBC. So who did not go to your high school? Was it Alex Gonzalez, Robert Hegges, Lamar Miller, or Chuck Todd?
Chuck Todd.
No, Chuck Todd went there. The one that didn't go was Juan Epstein.
Juan Epstein.
Welcome
I
back.
I figured.
Got it. Right.
Oh, man.
So, all right.
That was my first guess. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, go with your first instinct. All right. Also, as we mentioned, you went to Miami-Dade Junior College. Which celebrity did not go to Miami-Dade? And, man, I had a lot to choose from. There's a lot of celebrities. So, who did not go there? Jimmy Buffett, Sylvester Stallone, Raul Ibanez, Steve Carlton.
Well, I know Lefty did and Ibanez. Buffett and Stallone? Yeah. I'm going to say Stallone.
Jimmy Buffett. Sly Stallone went to Miami-Dade.
Right?
Yes, junior college. Yes,
how
he did.
That? He didn't go to Temple?
So see,
Sly?
There, you know what? Yeah, but there were three Dades back then. There was a Dade South, Dade North, and Dade Downtown. So they were all three separate locations.
Interesting.
Yeah, huh. Lefty went to Dade North. I went to Dade South.
I did not know that. Wow. Okay. Tom, we should probably just give him that, right?
There were three schools.
We'll give him that one.
Sly right. might have gone to one of those. Or no, Buffett might have gone to one of those.
No, Buffett went to Southern Mississippi.
Is that right?
Yes, he did.
How about that?
All right. Okay. We're going to give you that one. All right. In 1977, as we talked about, you played for the Spartanburg Phillies of the Western Carolina League in single A, had 13 wins and a team best 3.38 ERA. Who was not a teammate that year on that team? Who was not the teammate? So there's three teammates. One, somebody's not a teammate. Is it Nicholas Popovich, Joe Jones, Ricky Burdett, or Graham Foley?
Graham Foley.
Graham Foley is correct, and he's the one that edits our podcast, so he'll be very excited to hear that you knew that he wasn't a teammate.
Did not make it to Spartanburg.
Did not make it to Spartanburg, as far as I know. All right, you are on a roll. Question number four. You set a record in 1980 for fewest regular season appearances, six, before making a start in the World Series. Who just broke that record in 2021? I wonder if you'd followed along here. So someone just broke that record. Was it Dylan Lee from the Braves, Ian Anderson from the Braves, Luis Garcia, or Jose Urquidy from the Astros? Dylan Lee, Ian Anderson, Luis Garcia, or Jose Urquidy, if I'm saying that name right.
I'm going to go with Urquidy.
No, it was Dylan Lee. That was a tough one. That I thought maybe you'd hear that from someone in the media, but I guess no worries. So,
nah.
All right, you are 2 for 4. Here's an easy one. It's a true or false question. There was a movie called Marty that came out in 1955. Okay, did it win the Academy Award? Or I'll say it won the Academy Award for Best Picture. Is that true or false?
False.
No, it's true. Marty won the Academy Award for Best Picture.
God. Really?
Yes.
Well, was that the Marty Bystrom? Yeah, was
never
that the Marty Bystrom story? Or
knowing that
it?
Marty was going to be born
in 1950, whatever. Right. But what was that about Marty?
It was a romantic drama, 1955. Yes, Ernest Borgnine, I think, was in there. So, all right, here we go. In 1980, Steve Carlton led the Phillies pitchers with 19 hits. Who was second with number of hits? Was it Randy Lurch, Bob Walk, Dick Ruthven, or LC?
Randy Lurch.
No, it was Dick Ruthven.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was going to go Lurch,
really?
Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, because he was a good hitter.
He was.
Lurch could hit.
This is one of the more tougher quizzes, I got to tell you, Marty. All right, we mentioned Nolan Ryan. How many times did Nolan Ryan win 20 games? Now, he won 324 wins total, mm-hmm. right? How many times did he win 20 games? Was it 1, 2, 3, or 4?
That's a tough question.
That is a tough question. This is a tough quiz I'm giving him.
I would say two.
Two is correct. Nice. I would have thought a lot more, but he did it in 73 and 74. Now, obviously, he had a lot of
career.
He had a 19-win season. He had a bunch of, you know, higher teens. All right, the last question has absolutely nothing. What's that?
I was going to say, I mean, he was a 500 pitcher for a long time. So I wouldn't think that he won 20 that many times because of that.
Yeah.
But anyway.
All right, this is the last question, and it has absolutely nothing to do with you and your life or baseball. But I just was I had to come up with a question. So I'm going to say, you have a lifeline. Tom Burgoyne does not know this quiz ahead of time. So Tom is your lifeline if you need a lifeline, okay? So here's your question. Okay. And if you win this, we will send you that fake replica ring that we gave out, all right? What two countries share the longest land border, okay? What two countries share the longest land border? Is it Russia and Kazakhstan? Is it Chile and Argentina? Is it China and Mongolia? Or is it U.S. and Canada? You can use your remember, you can use your lifeline even as a discuss this one.
Yeah.
Tom, you want to help?
Tom.
All right.
Yeah,
Here, let me.
Tom,
go ahead. I'm going to say, the Fanatic. Go ahead.
I would say U.S. and Canada, but I'm not. That could be the trick question.
Now, I'm going to say you are correct, Marty. I'd say go for it. U.S., Canada, John. Come on.
Is that your final answer?
That's our final answer.
All right. Marty Bystrom gets the replica ring from 1980 as a backup. So
beautiful.
Very good. Right. U.S. and Canada. So awesome. Marty, it was really fun having you on. And we didn't even talk about it. You're down in New Smyrna Beach down in Florida, right?
Yep.
Which is between Daytona and Vero, right? It's between there somewhere, like I guess Central Coast.
Yeah, it's a little north of Daytona.
Yeah, between Daytona and Cape Canaveral. Yeah.
Yep. And what are you? I know you were in the insurance industry at one point.
No, I am in the window business now. I work for Renewal by Anderson.
Great. Awesome. All right. Well, good. Well, we hope it was great seeing you about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I hope we see you sooner than that. Maybe you'll even, if we make the playoffs, we make a little run, maybe we'll see you here at Citizens Bank Park.
That would be great. It was great seeing you guys too, and I appreciate everything. Thank you very much. It was a lot of fun.
Great. Thanks a lot, Marty.
You got it. See ya.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Well, that was fun, huh, John?
You know what? I love seeing those guys, you know, because, as you know, we're the same age, and it was such a seminal time in our lives when the Phillies finally broke through, because we, you know, as like a lot of fans, you know, we got so close in the 70s, right? And then the 80s and that Houston Astros series, I just remember, again, I was 15, we were both 15 years old, and it was just mental anguish, right? Because every game other than game one went to extra innings. Then you got to play Nolan Ryan. You think it's all over, and then you think you're going to win, and then they tie it up, and then we end up winning, and all these great clutch hits by Del Unser and you know, everybody, Greg Gross, and just clutch plays by Manny Trio and clutch pitching by Tug. It was just and then to win the World Series, I just remember being on top of the world as a Phillies fan.
It was the time of our lives, John.
Yep, and just little who would have thought back then,
I know,
right, that we would be doing a podcast.
It's so cool.
And you'd be best friends with a Fanatic, and I guess I'd be God knows what I'm doing.
It's hard to explain because, you know, you try to tell people, it's so cool that, you know, we've grown up and you get to, you know, talk to and get to know, you know, all these guys who, you know, we followed every day, you know. So, it's really great. So, great having Marty on. John, let's keep rolling. Let's keep winning. The team's doing well. And, you know,
hopefully next podcast, we can start talking about, you know, the pennant race as well. Because right now we are, again, September, 8th right now. So we are, you know, right there. We're four games up, right?
Correct.
The tiebreak lead on Milwaukee. But hopefully the next podcast, we will be even more excited.
I love it, John. All right. Well, let's do it. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to Phillies Backstage, and we'll see you next time. Backstage, we're going.